DW Deutsche Welle. World in progress.
I've lived through 10 hurricane seasons, but it's never been this bad. I always thought that Puerto Ricans were exaggerating when they would hoard food and water before any hurricane warning. It was like the fairy tale of the bad wolf who never showed up. But this time, he came.
The wolf that this Puerto Rican woman refers to came in the form of two monster hurricanes last autumn. Hurricanes Irma and Maria swept away beaches and houses, causing huge damage in Puerto Rico and across the Antilles, and killing dozens of people. So what's it like a few months after the storms hit this area? That's the topic of this edition of World in Progress. I'm Anke Rasper in Bonn, Germany. It's been several months now since the hurricanes. However, half of Puerto Ricans still don't have electricity. The island, Puerto Rico, is one of three in the Caribbean that my colleague Anne-Kathrin Mellmann recently visited. The others were St. Martin, a tiny island east of Puerto Rico, and Barbuda, located south of St. Martin. Together, Antigua and Barbuda form one of the small island states in the archipelago of the Antilles. But while Barbuda was completely devastated by Hurricane Irma, Antigua wasn't. Since more than 90% of buildings were destroyed, most of the inhabitants of Barbuda fled to Antigua and are still living there. And reconstruction is going to take a long time, as Anne-Kathrin Mellmann reports. Her documentary is presented by Sue Cox.
Ivy Joseph's heart thumps as she gets off the ferry which links the two sister islands of the small Caribbean state of Antigua and Barbuda. She's excited to see her neighbours again. The elderly woman has not seen her cottage on Barbuda, or what remains of it, in weeks. In September, approximately 1,700 residents were evacuated from the island. First, the monster Hurricane Irma flattened homes across the country. Less than 2 weeks later, Hurricane Jose threatened to hit the island once again. Today, Joseph plans to clean up her property and then return to Antigua in the evening by ferry. Shocked, she takes in the debris-littered landscape that was once the center of Barbuda. Right in the middle lie the ruins of her children's cottages and part of her own.
Water was inside. Yes, the sea came up. The sea? Yeah, the sea come right up. The sea, the water was all in our home.
Only 2 hours of Hurricane Irma with record winds of 300 kilometers per hour were needed to destroy Joseph's home, strip the mangroves, lock the tops of palm trees, and sweep away houses. Located on the northeastern edge of the Caribbean, Barbuda is one of the smallest islands in the Antilles. The archipelago was first hit by Irma at the beginning of September. After that, the powerful Category 5 storm moved directly over the western islands, including the former Dutch Antilles, St. Martin and Saba, the French overseas territories of St. Barts and St. Martin, and the British and Virgin Islands. Only 10 days later, Hurricane Maria, also a Category 5, ravaged the island of Puerto Rico. The Caribbean has never before experienced two such powerful hurricanes in quick succession, perhaps the first time that the effects of climate change had been so visible.
Tonight, in the wake of Hurricane Maria, parts of Puerto Rico are desperate. Many areas unreachable by land or by phone, and virtually the entire U.S. territory.
Suddenly, these islands, so culturally, geographically, and economically different from one another, had a common problem. Without adequate protection, they were at the mercy of the forces of nature.
Sur l'île voisine de Saint-Barthélemy, l'évolution de la situation vue par la webcam du port de Gustavo.
Op andere eilanden, zoals hier op de Virgin Eilanden, stijgt de zee en wakkert de wind al flink aan.
Hurricane left minor damage in Antigua, but not its sister state Barbuda, with reports suggesting that at least 90% of the island's houses have been destroyed.
Barbuda, a pile of rubble. 68-year-old Joseph found shelter on the island of Antigua with relatives. She was one of the lucky ones. Hundreds of her neighbours are struggling to make ends meet, living in emergency shelters. The abandoned buildings in Barbuda are falling apart more and more each day. What Irma failed to destroy completely is being finished off by the sun, wind and rain. In many cases, only foundations are left. At the ferry dock, Mayor Wadey Burton welcomes residents who return on a daily basis to help clean up. Reconstruction at this stage is unthinkable. He complains that the island's inhabitants have not been able to return sooner.
I think it's been too long. People have gotten readjusted in Antigua, and their life now is based in Antigua because they're working over there. So now they can't come over, clean up and put things together over here to return to normal. School is still damaged, the airport is still down. It's very depressing when you come back and you realize that everything in your house is gone.
The school still looks the same as it did the day after the hurricane. Only a handful of US aid workers are here, and several electricians dispatched from Cuba are repairing damaged wires. Many of the people who live on Barbuda earn their living through fishing or with jobs in the local council. Some work in the few luxury hotels that line the picturesque beaches. The municipality has no reserve funds because the only industry on the island is tourism.
In the Caribbean, to attract hotels, what the government do is that they have been given tax breaks. So investors come, they don't pay any income tax, they don't pay any ABST. You come in, you set up, and that usually lasts for like around 25 years. You don't pay any tax. So normally when a hotel comes, what we get from hotels is basically employment, and that's it. Right now there's no hotel open right now.
No tourists means no revenue. Burton says the council has just filed a request for a new $40 million hotel project to be built on the shores of the lagoon. But the Environment Ministry has advised against it.
But as you say, it's a disaster now. People want money, so we'll see how that goes.
Thousands of frigate birds nest in the mangroves, which have been stripped of their foliage by the hurricane. Alongside the pristine white beaches and shimmering turquoise waters, they are Barbuda's biggest attraction. Males are known for displaying their bright red necks to impress the females. Kelly Burton, the mayor's uncle, works for the Environment Ministry. He is relieved to see the birds again. It's a sign that nature is recovering quickly from Hurricane Irma.
It's amazing of what destruction Irma did on our mangrove system. What I've been noticing, the temperature is very, very warm in the summer. We have a drier, shorter winter, and it's also very hot, you know, in the summer. So those are the conditions for greater storm. So you already start seeing the effect of that. Climate change, global warming, and sea level rise. It could be, you call it bleaching. It doesn't track the fish. You know, it's just the whole ecosystem is going all out of whack right there. The more intense of the storm, more of the bigger corals will tumble down, break, larger waves from hitting our shores. So without these, our shores will start to erode.
The tiny island surrounded by the ocean waves is defenseless. Burton says it's not a question of if, but when the next storm will strike. Nevertheless, people still want to return to the island, even those who have lost everything.
And you say bringing people to a safer place. This is what we know. We grew up here. We understand here. And to go somewhere where you consider safer, it's different for us. You know, it's if you take us somewhere where it's colder, we're not accustomed to snow. We're not accustomed to a desert climate. You know, you're changing our lifestyle. You know, how can we adapt to those conditions? You're talking about our age. We're not, 5 years, 10 years old. So adapting to that is not an option. You know, we prefer to stay here and weather it out rather than trying to adapt.
The people here will have to adapt to climate change and, above all, construct more stable buildings. But nobody will foot the bill for strong rooftops and concrete bunkers that can withstand the storm surge. The homes needed for the predominantly poor families who live here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sure. J- During a radio program, Prime Minister Gaston Brown answers callers' questions every Saturday afternoon. But now he must ask the rest of the world for money to help rebuild Barbuda.
You know the irony about it, most of the support has been really South-South support, developing countries giving from the little they have, while the developed countries turn a blind eye and say, oh, they're a wealthy country that can't even pay its debts, a wealthy country that can't rebuild Barbuda. Barbuda sitting down there idle, all these homes still without roofs. So we don't have the money. The problem is, if we had enough money, we'd be able to move quickly. The truth is, the way things are going right now, at best, we can probably patch up Barbuda, but if it gets another storm, similar consequences.
The small country does not have the means to rebuild Barbuda to hurricane-safe standards. Brown is also disappointed that the major industrialized nations, those who emit the most CO2 emissions, have not offered to help. Unlike some of the other islands in the region, the state of Antigua and Barbuda is not an overseas territory of a larger, wealthy nation and therefore does not automatically receive aid or financial assistance.
Climate change respects no border. It respects no country, large or small. It is real. We don't have the luxury of denying the impact and the effects of climate change. We are living it here in the Caribbean. And for, in the case of Barbuda, for the first time in the history of the country, we have what is called internally displaced people. First time, 300 years. First time in 300 years that Barbuda has not had a single resident. So these are real issues that we are grappling with. I mean, there has to be some level of responsibility because we know why these storms are getting more powerful. We know it's because of man-made interventions where climate change is real and that its consequences are enormous. They need to help us to build a more resilient Barbuda.
Resilience has become the buzzword. People here must learn to adapt and endure because it's impossible to fight off a Category 5 hurricane. Despite the hopelessness of the situation, Ivy Joseph continues to spend her day cleaning up.
I really don't know. They said the government will help you, assist you, but how long? They said they will. No, I don't know, but I pray that they will help me.
Antigua and Barbuda, like many other small island nations, has been left to fend for itself in the fight against climate change. The people who live here have no clear means of escape. Since 1981, the country has been independent of the UK, so there is no motherland which could feasibly take them in. The region's vulnerability can clearly be seen from the air. The tiny islands lie in the middle of the ocean with no protection. Defending themselves from the effects of climate change is also a question of money. The exclusive French holiday island, Saint Bartholomew, St. Bart's for short, has returned to its famed beauty only a few short weeks after Irma. Gently rippling bays, dazzling white sand beaches and turquoise waters make it a true island paradise. There are no big hotels here, only small guest houses which can cost around €1,000 per night. Almost all of the buildings still have their roofs, having withstood the hurricane's strong winds. At second glance, one can spot a few felled palm trees and piles of rubble here and there. Obviously, the owners have cleaned up the island as quickly as possible, allowing guests to continue enjoying their carefree Caribbean vacation. A short flight northwest of St. Bart's lies an island shared between France and the Netherlands, St. Martin or St. Maarten. The Dutch half is an autonomous region within the Kingdom of the Netherlands. Since Irma came through, it has resembled a disaster zone. The normally busy main beach of the capital, Philipsburg, is deserted. Yachts overturned by the strength of the hurricane lie crumbling in the sand. Only a few palm trees are left standing. Before the storm, daily cruise ship visits brought passengers to the long white beach as a form of low-price Caribbean mass tourism. Now, all the duty-free shops are empty. Looters have taken all the rum, and broken shop windows have not yet been replaced. Debris is scattered in front of the damaged beachfront restaurants. The only restaurant left unscathed is the one where Carmen works. It has reopened, but there aren't any customers.
It was like a war zone. First, the hurricane destroyed everything. Then it took 2 days for the army to arrive. There was looting, violence and rape, but no one speaks of that. Many people who left the island said, I will never come back to St. Martin.
The looters were the storm after the storm, evidence of deeper social problems and inequality on the island. While European visitors enjoy all the luxuries the Caribbean has to offer, the locals earn little money off the tourism industry. For nights after the hurricane, the streets of the island nation played host to anarchy. Only after 700 Dutch soldiers arrived and imposed a curfew did peace return. The Dutch army brought engineers who repaired hundreds of roofs, especially on public buildings and schools. Press officer Nick Hausman arrived in St. Martin a few days after Irma.
We are here because after a hurricane, there's a situation, a lot of damage, no communications, a lot of roads are not available, and that's where the military personnel can assist. We are able to provide assistance to make the roads available again, to get public services up and running, schools, universities, hospitals, police stations, the prison. Because when the kids are not at home, the parents can reconstruct their own houses, they can go to work, earn money again, get the groceries. So it's very important to get a normal life back to the island as soon as possible.
St. Martin improved its infrastructure after being hit by the extremely destructive Hurricane Lewis in 1995. Since then, the electricity lines have been installed underground. This ensured that the power supply for the 34,000 inhabitants was protected from the storm. Fortunately for the island residents, the Dutch army came to help. Even before the storm hit, the Red Cross sent dozens of workers to the island, anticipating the scale of the impending disaster. Even so, Irma left very few buildings undamaged, meaning most hotels weren't ready to open by the peak Christmas season. It was another catastrophe brought about by Irma. 80% of the island's inhabitants work in tourism. Many have lost their jobs, including the parents of two cousins, Gisette and Asiliana. The 15-year-old students spend their free time in the schoolyard. At noon, the Red Cross offered them sandwiches for lunch. They will provide food for the children for the next few months so that their parents can help with the rebuilding process. Gisette and Asiliana say Hurricane Irma and climate change are now major issues that are being discussed in the classroom, especially the risks that residents face in the future, such as homelessness, hunger and even death.
I lost my house. That was scary for me. I just hope nothing like that happened again because it was scary.
I am scared because I'm scared that if we rebuild, probably next year, something worse could happen and St. Martin won't be the same again.
Their families can't afford to move to a hurricane-safe area. Like many others who live here, they can only hope that the next big storm will spare St. Martin and that the tourists will return soon.
When will it be ready?
Spirits are still high in the Baptist-run soup kitchen. The place smells of plastic flooring and cooked vegetables. Before the hurricane hit, around 70 people used to eat here every day, says Nolan Nanton, a priest. Now there's twice as many.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Irma, most persons will have lost their roof, some persons lost their house, most houses sustained damage. That kind of impact that we would have had would affect persons' livelihood, daily living, and so forth. So from my observation, I think most persons are more in a survival mode where they are trying to make the best of the circumstances.
Nanton fears the social problems will only get worse because the island's most important source of income, tourism, has dried up for the time being. On the Philipsburg beach, Carmen is frustrated at the lengthy political dispute between the autonomous government of St. Martin and the Dutch, who say their reconstruction aid comes with financial conditions. Initially, St. Martin was reluctant to accept a commission to monitor spending, though the government eventually agreed.
There are many people who would like St. Martin to be part of the Netherlands, especially in this terrible situation. We've seen that our government has been overwhelmed. Economically, we've also had difficulties. Every year we're in the red. With such a disaster, it remains unclear where the money for the reconstruction will come from and who will organize it.
The residents of Puerto Rico are separated from the United States. It's an unincorporated territory. After hurricanes Irma and Maria lashed the archipelago, pails and bowls still litter the floor of San Juan International Airport, catching the raindrops which penetrate the damaged roof. Two of the four terminals are closed due to severe storm damage. Fingerprint scanners at security are constantly failing. One immigration official curses U.S. President Donald Trump, who visited Puerto Rico after the disaster and threw rolls of paper towels into the crowd as a goodwill gesture. Many people here consider his embarrassing performance a sign that Puerto Rico needs to fix things on its own. Puerto Rico is back is emblazoned on freshly printed baseball caps in souvenir shops. But there are no tourists around to buy them. On a Sunday afternoon, only the locals dance in the shade of the trees spared from the storm's strong winds. There are no visitors to take pictures or dance with them. Much of the famous Caribbean joie de vivre has been lost. In a cafe in the center of town, a worker hands out warm drinks because there is no electricity. The hurricane damaged most of the electricity lines. Most restaurants and shops are still boarded up, also out of fear of looters. When night falls, the once bustling area is deserted. A US-run hospital ship is anchored in the harbor. Alongside is a long queue of people in need of medical assistance. The hospital in Olga Burgos village was looted. The old woman spent all day traveling to San Juan in the hope of finding a doctor to examine her aching knee.
I don't know what happened to my knee. Maybe I carried too much. We are doing lots of things that we don't usually do these days, lugging around heavy pails of water, for example. We have no water or electricity in my village.
Written on boards covering a shop window are the words, Puerto Rico will get back on its feet. Come in and buy. Luz Garcia has a power generator for her souvenir shop. It works, but customers are staying away.
We've had to cancel many orders because we just don't have the money right now. Thank God the banks have helped us. We won't have to repay loans right now. We have no money for salaries, only for the necessities, for food. But we have nothing for rent or for the car, only enough to survive.
Thanks to power generators, some of the hotels can reopen. Marisol Morris, originally from Chile, can turn on the lights in her bed and breakfast for a few hours in the evening.
If
only the electricity would be restored soon. I've had inquiries from people all over the world, and the first thing they ask me is, do you have electricity? Because I still have to answer no. Many have cancelled. It's almost like living in a war zone. No electricity, often no water.
Hurricane Irma first hit Puerto Rico, and Morris had to repair part of her patio roof. But as soon as she was done with that, the even stronger Hurricane Maria blew through and tore the roof off again. Morris says she felt left alone in the disaster.
Puerto Rico is part of the U.S., but at the same time it's not. The U.S. states that were hit by the hurricanes quickly got the necessary help, but Puerto Rico is an island. They like us, and at the same time they reject us.
Maria devastated the island and its tourism industry, which supports 80% of the jobs in the U.S. territory. Puerto Rico had already been suffering an economic crisis before the hurricane. But Carlos Saviera Gutierrez, the Secretary of Labor, said things were just beginning to look up, with slightly lower unemployment rates. Those hopes were dashed in the wake of the two hurricanes.
It's not yet possible to put a figure on the consequences of the hurricane. But what we can already say is that many thousands of Puerto Ricans have lost their jobs. We only know of those who have come to us requesting support. Many haven't come to us yet, and many have already left Puerto Rico.
More than 70,000 Puerto Ricans left the island for the U.S. state of Florida in October alone, because with U.S. passports, they can. The two hurricanes have accelerated migration from the territory. Demographer Raúl Figuera believes the exodus may reach levels not seen since the 1950s, when hundreds of thousands of Puerto Ricans emigrated to the United States. Today, more Puerto Ricans live on the mainland than on the island itself.
Some of the people immigrating today can be called refugees. They're leaving Puerto Rico because they can't live without water and electricity, because they lost their jobs as a result of Hurricane Maria, because their business was destroyed, or because they have no functioning internet. Many have been looking for work off the island. They've been heading to the U.S. with their families. But unlike the 1950s, many now have relatives on the mainland, making relocation easier.
Puerto Rico is home to about 3.5 million inhabitants. By 2020, Figuera thinks that that figure will drop by 500,000, with the number of people leaving the island for the U.S. mainland doubling as a result of the storms. Figuera is also without electricity or internet at the moment, but he wants to stay. Marisol Morris also doesn't want to give up. Instead, she plans to better prepare for future disasters.
I've lived through 10 hurricane seasons, but it's never been this bad. I always thought that Puerto Ricans were exaggerating when they would hoard food and water before any hurricane warning. It was like the fairy tale of the bad wolf who never showed up. But this time, he came.
The threat posed by hurricanes is shared by all the Caribbean islands, and as ocean waters continue to warm, those storms are likely to become worse. Some islands are better prepared than others. According to German insurance company Munich Re, the 2017 hurricane season caused more than $100 billion worth of damage in the Caribbean. Not included in that figure is the human cost, the ordinary people whose livelihoods have been devastated. Without insurance and without savings, these people depend on the tourism industry and can't just go off and live somewhere safer. They're suffering from the effects of climate change, and the recent hurricanes have been a warning for the Caribbean and the world. If we don't change, this island paradise will be lost forever.
That report by Anne-Katrin Mellmann was presented by Sue Cox. You can listen back to this show and other editions and individual reports at dw/worldinprogress. Or you can download the podcast from iTunes or SoundCloud. You can also follow us on Facebook. Just go to DW Global Society. Do tune in again next week to a new edition of World in Progress. Thanks for listening and take care.